Okay, welcome everyone. Thursday afternoon. This is the diehard crew here, or you just love a good attendee party and are just kind of killing time until the party. So, one or the other. Either way, happy to have you at this session. I'm Jürgen Willis. I'm the group program manager for the workflow team, which is part of Scott Guthrie's Azure Application Platform team. I want to spend some time today talking to you about the experience and capabilities available to you for running workflows in Azure. Agenda. So I'm going to actually focus the majority of the talking about what you can do right now, walk out of here, and what you can do in terms of using the .NET Framework workflow capabilities in Azure roles. I'll start with just sort of an overview of some of the capabilities and customer scenarios. I wanted to use a chunk of the talk to actually go through a few different patterns, so typical patterns we see with customers who are using workflows in Azure, describe those as much as time permits, go through a few different demos of that as well. And then at the tail end of the talk, I'm going to give a little bit more of a preview to some longer lead work that we're doing in terms of standing up a service capability for you for running, deploying, and managing your workflow instances in Azure. So we'll come to that towards the end of the talk. First, a quick little prop for Dave's session. So the team actually has done a ton of work in the .NET 4.5 release. I'm actually really, really happy with how that release is going to shape up in terms of addressing a lot of the key customer feedback we've gotten coming out of the .NET 4 release. And so we've done a lot of great work to address those in 4.5. Dave has a session talking about those things immediately after this one. I believe it's just right upstairs. So an easy walk for you to get to Dave's session. If you haven't had an opportunity to look at the 4.5 work that we're doing for workflow, definitely would encourage you to take the time to watch Dave's session. So this is a little bit of an interesting session to try and target from an audience standpoint, because there's a little bit of sort of an intersection of workflow and Azure capabilities. So I wanted to start just to sort of understand who's here today. So how many people are Workflow Foundation users today? Okay, maybe about half folks. And how many people are using Azure in any fashion with or without workflow today? Great. Probably another half. And how many people are using workflow in Azure? Much smaller group. I won't count my team. Okay, great. So hopefully this session helps you out with sort of that intersection of those capabilities. All right, so we actually are working with quite a few customers, both internal partners as well as external customers, who are using WF today in Azure. And I just wanted to give a list of a bunch of different scenarios that we have working with some of our customers. You know, these really kind of reflect a lot of sort of the canonical workflow scenarios that you see even running in on-prem or your own data center environments. Things like human workflow, collaboration scenarios, business process management, CRM, long-running order processing and fulfillment and provisioning scenarios. We have an interesting project going with MCS around law enforcement scenarios. There's actually quite a few examples of customers who are actually using workflow to manage their Azure deployments themselves in terms of deploying their roles, setting up their SQL Azure experiences, and so on. We have a number of internal partner teams who are actually doing this. The Windows Phone Services group is actually one example where new phone services get deployed into the Azure environment using workflow to kind of govern the logic behind that deployment. And data aggregation enrichment is another scenario that that we see with workflow in Azure today. kind of quick just sort of deep dive. For those of you who follow the Windows Azure team blog, there was a recent blog post that went up there from iCertus. iCertus is a partner that we've been working with pretty closely in terms of them building out a new solution that is very heavily reliant on workflow, and they're very focused on building out their solution as a cloud solution from the start. So they're an ISV that provides solutions for contract lifecycle management, transportation management, partner relationship management, et cetera. One particular example is sort of in the graphic there at the bottom of the screen is they work with a company that manufactures irrigation systems. And those irrigation systems get sold to farmers via a large network of dealers. And so workflow is basically the backing logic in terms of the dealers interacting with the manufacturer and sort of getting contracts in place and orders delivered and that sort of thing. Because, of course, that contract negotiation and the order management can run over many weeks, many months, et cetera. Workflow is a great fit there. Their implementation actually follows a common pattern, you know, that we see in terms of they're running workflows as WCF workflow services. In their case, they've actually deployed those into worker roles. A little bit later in the talk, I can sort of explain why that is when we get into some of the details. They also externalize the workflow definitions from the role deployments themselves. So the XAMLX files are actually not deployed directly with the role deployments. They externalize those into SQL Azure and then dynamically load that at runtime. And then from an authoring standpoint, developers are authoring the workflows today, but they are building out an authoring tool that rehosts the workflow designer that we ship in the framework. And that will allow non-developers to participate in app customization, extensibility, et cetera. So that's kind of one example. I put the link for the blog post there if you want to read a little bit more about their example. A quick sort of segue, this pattern in terms of, you know, rehosting the designer, storing the workflow definitions in some external store, whether it's blob storage or SQL Azure, and dynamically loading that is sort of a common pattern that we see. One of the things I want to do in this talk is, as much as possible, provide you some links to some code examples for this so that you can walk away, you can go download some of these code examples if these are kind of relevant for your scenarios, and take a look and kind of get bootstrapped on some of these. So at the bottom there, I have two links. The first link actually shows rehosted designer, stores workflows out in Azure Blob storage, and then dynamically loads that, in this case, using Workflow Invoker. The second example isn't Azure specific, but it shows how you can use an ASP virtual path provider to load up a XAMLX file that you might be running in IIS. And so again, you get sort of these dynamic deployment capabilities associated with the workflows. So a couple of reference links there for you if that's of interest. Okay. So kind of summary of workflow 4 in Azure. You know, the general story is, you know, it all works today. I'll go into a couple of caveats later, but the general story is, you know, the capabilities that you can do with WF4 today on premises, for those of you who are using workflow, absolutely you can leverage all of those skills. For the most part, it ends up being fairly straightforward in terms of taking your workflow applications to Azure, at least from the standpoint of the workflow pieces themselves. A couple of notes here. So in the .NET 4 release, we ship a set of SQL scripts that set up your schema and logic for the instance store. Those capabilities relied on things in SQL Server that aren't yet supported in SQL Azure. So we had to make a change in .NET 4 Platform Update 1. So you may have seen that on top of .NET 4, there's been a series of what we call platform updates. There's three of those that have been put out now. In that first platform update, we shipped a change there that allows the instance store to target SQL Azure. From a role standpoint, there's actually nothing you have to do. So the platform update is now integrated as part of the guest OS images in Azure itself. So it's not like you have to go deploy this yourself into the roles, but in terms of like setting up the SQL Azure database and so on, for the instance store, this is something you'd want to be aware of. .NET 4.5, there's not a date yet in terms of that being the guest OS images, but that is coming. And certainly if you're very excited about what Dave's going to talk about, a new 4.5 features, that will be available to you as soon as that becomes a part of the guest OS images. You can install additional framework components into roles yourself. It's not, I would say, a trivial undertaking, but it's not actually sort of super complicated either. I provide a link there. One of our Azure MVPs, Magnus Mortensen, actually did a nice blog post in terms of installing 4.5 in the startup method of your roles if you actually, you know, sort of can't wait and want to get those 4.5 capabilities into your role. All right. Other thing I mentioned is if you haven't gone to our dubf.codeplex site, we'd certainly encourage you to go there. There's a number of good projects we have up there, things around kind of custom activity packs, unit testing, a bunch of sort of utility functions. One of the projects we have up there is a set of Azure activities. So this is just an out-of-the-box set of activities that you can plug into your workflows for doing things like targeting, blob storage, table storage, cache, et cetera. So check that out. Okay, so that's the overview. Let's go kind of next level of detail and talk about, you know, some of these common patterns we see for customers using the framework in Azure today. Before I kind of jump into the Azure patterns, I want to actually level set a little bit in terms of just what are the hosting options for running workflows in the framework, because I sort of find that, you know, a lot of customers who are running workflows today may not even sort of know some of these distinctions among the hosting options. First off, we have this class Workflow Invoker. You can think about Workflow Invoker as really just sort of a run and done. I just want to execute a workflow. It'll run to completion and return control to me. Think about it in terms of a function invocation. It might be sort of a button click event handler type of scenario and that sort of thing. Honestly, typically what people use Workflow Invoker for is activity unit testing. It's actually a very handy capability for testing your activities before kind of constructing into larger workflows. Invoker doesn't give you any persistence for long-running workflows. They're not resumable workflows, et cetera. Sort of the next capability we provide is a thing we call Workflow Application. Workflow Application now gives you persistence of the workflows and tracking. It allows your workflows to go idle, be persisted. You can resume those, load those back into memory, et cetera, as well as sort of an async programming model over the top of your workflows. Workflow application is a scenario if you're integrating it into your application, into your process, right? And so, you know, a classic example, and I'll sort of show an example of this, is where you have workflow application integrated into an ASP app that might be driving some of the behavior of the ASP app, or doing some back-end integration with services that are called and getting data for use in the ASP app and that sort of thing. So there's the scenarios around workflow application. Workflow service host is the next capability that we provide. So this is a reflection of the deep work that we did in terms of integrating workflow and WCF in the .NET 4 release. This allows you to expose workflows as WCF services. And treat them as WCF services. This allows you to easily compose WCF services via a set of messaging activities that we ship in the toolbox for you for workflow service hosts. This will give you, you know, WCF message-based communication with workflows. It gives you message-based activation for starting new workflows, some pretty rich correlation capabilities to make sure a message comes in. We can look at the properties in the message, load up the right workflow instance, resume that instance with the message, et cetera. And it's going to give you some other things like config support for the host, as well as out-of-the-box support for durable timers. You can set up durable timers in a workflow application. There's a little bit more code you have to go right there. It's an out-of-the-box capability with workflow service host. Workflow service host, just like normal WCF service host, is something that you can go host yourself, self-host scenario. You can do that with workflow service host. Most typically, people will actually run that in IIS and leverage the WAS-based activation capabilities over various transports for kicking off new workflow instances. So that's very common. And then sort of the next layer on top of that is some of you may be aware of Windows Server App Fabric. Windows Server App Fabric is not something that we support in Azure today, just something we simply haven't had the resources to go invest in some of the work. And there are actually some blockers in the Azure platform around that as well. So it's not something that's supported in Azure today. But these IIS extensions give you a few things. So the workflow runtime emits tracking events out to ETW. These IIS extensions will aggregate those events, put them in a SQL data store. There are UI add-ins for the IIS admin console that allow you to kind of see what activities are executing, do configuration, and that sort of thing. And there's also this auto-start capability. This auto-start capability makes sure that your workflow service host instances are up and alive and running. That can be important for scenarios like where you have timers so that you need that host instance alive to kind of look for timers that have expired. Okay, so that was kind of just a level setting around your hosting options, because it will be reflected in the patterns that I talk about here today. So the patterns. So workflow application, I'll take first, and then we'll talk about workflow service host or WCF workflow service set of scenarios next. Workflow application. So a common pattern there would be having the workflow application running within a ASP app that is deployed into a web role. Another common scenario might be actually have workflow as backend logic that is doing message processing. So it is running in a worker role. It is picking up messages from either an Azure queue or service bus queue or topic. Does the processing over those messages return some result, or basically just sort of completes the work asynchronously from the front end. The WCF workflow services pattern, so the most typical thing would be running that in WebRel in IIS. A sort of extension on top of that. Of course, WCF services allows you to support multiple different bindings. One of the bindings that Service Bus team ships is a Service Bus binding that will allow you to consume Service Bus messages and deliver those into WCF workflow services. And then, of course, there's the self-hosting option. And so you can, and there are a number of scenarios for actually just hosting yourself that workflow service host instance within a worker role run method. You can just, again, this isn't going to be an exhaustive list of patterns. You could, in fact, run this in IIS and work a role if you wanted to. There are other sort of patterns, but these are some of the ones that we're most commonly seeing with customers. Okay. I want to jump into a demo. Before I do that, the workflow diehards will be probably very familiar with this, but here's just the sort of the high-level pattern for using workflow application, right? You create a new workflow application type. It's specific to a definition type. So you pass in what's the definition of my workflow. Again, that could just be a compile type that I'm accessing. It could be something I'm dynamically loading from memory, et cetera. And then I need to wire up a set of event handlers for the workflow application. Event handlers include things like, you know, what should I do when the workflow goes idle? What should I do when the workflow is completed, et cetera. Call the run method to start that and kick off a new instance of the workflow, given that definition. And then that workflow probably is long running. If that workflow is long running, has reached an idle point, then the way I go resume that workflow is by calling this resume bookmark method. And this is just a named continuation point within the workflow. I can pass in additional data there for the workflow to consume and be stored in workflow variables and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the pattern for using workflow application. With that, let me go ahead and jump into a demo example. All right. So I'm going to actually start this demo by actually just going ahead and running the demo, and then we'll kind of take a look at the backing workflow logic. So I have a MVC project here with workflow integrated. We'll take a look at that in a moment. That is part of the cloud project. And when this launches, I just get the default MVC page, which if you use MVC, you've seen many, many times. On that page, I'll see a register button. Okay, and that register button, I click that. It's going to give me a form to fill in here. I'll fill that in. Okay, so that is going to send a message. It actually kicks off a workflow. This gives me this page that I need to go check my email and complete that link. In this particular case, when it's running locally, just in terms of the debug settings, it's not going to actually send me an email. It's going to just post this file to a mailbox folder, right? And because I waited too long to respond, it's actually given me two different messages. So it's running on this timer to keep delivering me messages as reminders that I need to go complete my registration. So let me just grab the I'll grab the URL here. That's not it. Took a little too long, so I would have to go re-register here. I'm going to actually show this running against again in Azure, so I'll just kind of show the full scenario when I have it running in Azure. But basically, this is going to I will click on this, complete the registration, and then it will allow me to log in. We'll see that again running in Azure in a moment. So before I do that, let's go ahead and take a look at the app itself. Fairly straightforward app. I have my MVC app here, the account controller I saw there. That account controller is basically the thing that I'm addressing with, you know, registration request, verifying my registration, completing my registration, and that sort of thing. This account controller takes actions on the controller, like register and verify and that sort of thing, and it basically forwards those requests to the workflow. There's a set of custom activities in here that are used by this account registration workflow. This workflow is a state machine implementation. So it starts off, goes into this send mail state. The send mail is going to validate my registration data that I submitted. It's going to prepare the email message. It's going to send out the message. Right at that point, it's waiting in this state. And there's a number of transitions that are defined here. Those transitions might be, for example, that I want to that I'm going to request to be resent, which is actually kind of the scenario that we saw in the demo there. It may be that it just timed out. The request timed out. I didn't respond quickly enough. And so there's a delay activity here that's just going to rerun, do a self-transition back to this send mail, and send me a reminder mail that I need to go complete this registration. When I actually complete the registration, it's going to hit this transition. That's going to confirm and complete the state machine associated with this. So this is a workflow behind the registration process itself, right? I could obviously make this much, much richer, but this is basically providing some of that long-running behavior behind the ASP app itself, so I don't actually have to implement that within the ASP application, okay? So I do actually have this deployed and running up in Azure, so let's go take a look at this and launch this. Moments before this session, this worked. I'm confident. I'm very confident. All right. No typing errors. Hopefully, no validation errors. Second time around, it always goes faster once you've kind of primed the pump a little bit. So we'll see a few latencies in some of these apps. Also, I'll have on the great. So that completed. So if I go over, recheck my mail here, I'll see that I have this email to go complete the registration. Click there, invalid registration. Oh, was that an old one? Oh, great. Thanks very much. Great. Thank you. There we go. All right. Can I? All right, so now you can see that I'm in fact logged in as that user. Having completed the workflow that provisions me into the registration store behind the MVC app, and I'm now signed in. Okay, great. Okay, let me switch back real quick. Okay. So I do have a link there. You can actually download this sample. Again, as much as possible, I'll actually try and provide links to the code. We won't have time to kind of go nth level of detail in the code and all of this, but I encourage you to download this and have a look for yourself. Next scenario I want to talk about here, I'm going to do this very quickly. I have a bet with Dave about whether I'm going to actually get through all of these demos. I think he might win, but I'm going to go quickly here. So the next scenario is, again, I talked about workflow application. In this particular instance, it's workflow invoker. It would be very easy for it to kind of change this code and have it be workflow application based if this is a long-running workflow. Scenario here is I have messages on a service bus queue, and I want to consume those and process those via workflow. So you'll see this solution queue client. This is just an instance of the service bus client. It's going to, within a worker run method, it's going to just go through a loop, look for new messages on the queue. If it finds a message, it's going to call this process receive message method. That is going to then go get the body out of that service bus message, and the type of that body is going to be a math problem. So the scenario here is that the workflow solves a math problem. And then I'm going to invoke workflow invoker with this. I will just basically show you the demo here without actually kind of spending more time going through the code. It's actually a very, very simple demo. It's one of those things that is maybe less sort of real-world focused and more just sort of example focused of using it. So this is where workflow is a calculator of the math problem. I can put in a request to solve a problem. I can hit send. This from the ASP app is just posting a message onto a service bus queue. In the worker role, it's doing the loop there. It's looking for new messages on the queue. When it gets that, calls a workflow invoker, runs the workflow. The workflow, after it completes the calculation, posts that back out onto another service bus queue. And then I can just hit retrieve next solution in queue to get the result back from the workflow. So the workflow just did that, posted on the queue, and then I just went and looked for new messages on that response queue as well. Very, very simple example, maybe one that you want to take a look at offline. Okay, and so I have a link there to that example. So those are kind of the workflow application, workflow invoker focus patterns. Let's talk next about patterns for using WCF workflow services in Azure. And so I'm going to start this one by actually doing sort of a hello world example here, which I thought might be useful. So let's jump into code here. And actually, part of the message here is that this should be very straightforward from you if you're using WCF workflow services today. So I'll do a file new project. I'll go to just the existing set of .NET 4 templates that we have. We have this WCF workflow service application template. I'll click OK. If you've used this template, you know what the default template looks like. There's a receive request that gets in a piece of data here. It stores this data into a variable. The send response just calls toString on that data and returns the response. So these are some of the WCF focused messaging activities that we ship in .NET 4. You know, I would, of course, build out some logic in terms of what happens in between that receive and response. And then if I F5, I'm going to get the WCF test client loaded up here. I can go into the WCF test client and very easily run sort of an example over the top of my workflow service, get the response back, right? So fairly straightforward there. So now, you know, what do I do in terms of getting this into a cloud deployment? So I can go add a new project to my solution, and I'm going to add a cloud project. Now, the cloud project, when it comes up, I can pick, you know, the types of roles that I want to include here with the types of solutions, ASP or WCF service, et cetera, where it's going to go create that project for me associated with the role. In this case, I already have the project itself, and so I just add this sort of empty in this fashion. I get the Azure project. I get my roles. An option I have on the roles is actually to add in or link the roles into a project I already have in my solution, right? So I'm going to click Add from Existing Project and Solution, OK through here, and it's going to create a new role for me that is linked to that service library, right? Now, again, if I go through and I F5 this, I'm going to see a very similar experience, but the difference here is that rather than just running that in IIS or IIS Express, it's actually now running in the Azure compute emulator, right? So it spun up the compute emulator and is running the app and deploying the app into the Azure compute emulator, right? And so if I look at this, I can actually come back here. I get the sort of that same startup page that I expect to see. I can come in and add a reference to my service. And I'm going to see the very same experience that I just saw before, right? Ping this. Great. Okay. So, you know, what I do now in terms of actually getting this up in Azure? To get it up in Azure, stop debugging here. I can come on to my project here, and I'll hit publish. And I pick the subscription that I'm actually targeting here. I can I'll pick the deployment or the hosted service that I want to deploy, or sorry, new terminology, the cloud service I want to deploy to. I can configure some things, like if I'm in sort of development mode, I probably would enable remote desktop and enable IntelliTrace, et cetera. I can just click through here and publish this. This is going to take some time in terms of deploying that up into Azure, spinning up the VM roles and that sort of thing. So we won't be able to hit it immediately. That process is going to get much quicker with Azure websites or some of the new things that are released as part of their preview that we just started talking about last week and this week. So this process does speed up. But right now I'm just deploying into web roles, and so we'll kind of let this go spin offline here, and we can come back to that. Okay. So there are some things to be aware of in terms of using WCF workflow services in Azure. This actually continued to get easier over time. So initially when Azure was out, the machine config on your roles didn't actually have some of the config that you needed for hosting and running WCF workflow services in particular. And so there was kind of more legwork you had to go do to, you know, add more config to your service deployments and so on. A lot of that has been addressed, and so you'll see when we kind of come back to the Azure project that it's much easier to go do that today, because all that config is now sort of a native part of the roles themselves. But there are still a few things to be aware of. So if you've done coding in Azure today, you probably know that there's no DTC, Distributed Transaction Controller, support in Azure. WebF4 actually leverages DTC pretty heavily to make sure that there is good process and message consistency, integrity, so that when, for example, we're picking up a message, we're running through the workflow, we're sending outbound messages, all those can be committed together as part of a distributed transaction, and you sort of maintain consistency across all of those different resources. No DTC in Azure, that means that you don't get some of that support running in Azure roles. One mitigation for that is to actually, when you send replies, so we have this receive and send reply pattern for using the WCF messaging activities in a WCF workflow service, setting the persist before send flag there will guarantee that the workflow is being persisted as you're sending the outbound message. This avoids a scenario where, for example, the caller gets a response back, but then the workflow subsequently fails before it reaches a later persist point and ends up going back to an earlier persist point, and then it's just sort of stuck because it's waiting for the caller again, but the caller thinks it's done. So this is kind of a thing that you can go check to make sure that that inbound receive, the response, and the storing of the workflow instance are all done together, right? So that's kind of the first point. Second point, and this really isn't a workflow-specific thing, but generally when you're targeting SQL Azure and going across network boundaries and hitting a multi-tenant service and so on, you're going to want to write your code to be reliable in the face of bad responses from SQL Azure timeouts or et cetera. So you want to raise this connection retries in a workflow. You can do this within the config itself. So when you add the service behavior for the SQL workflow instance store, we've added this max connection retries. This was one of the things we did in that platform update one that I talked about. You can add this into your instance store configuration to up the retry count. And again, recommendation is there to actually set it at 15 or higher, just to make sure that you're not basically failing your workflow simply because you're getting timeouts or throttling or whatever out of SQL Azure. Okay. So workflow service host and web role. So there is a thing to be aware of here that unique to web roles is that the host name actually includes the web role and deployment, the specific sort of deployment in the web role. That's something that we store in our lock store. So this is the store that basically makes sure that there's only one node that is processing a workflow instance at a time. What this means is that that owner is now kind of tied to a specific deployment on a specific workflow, web role deployment. The issue here is that if I have multiple web role instances that are running that all want to be able to pick up this workflow and run it, or if the VM recycles and gets a new deployment, kind of increments a deployment count, that our system will think that a different host type has a lock on that and will prevent it from being loaded, right? So there is this issue right now in web role. This is something that we've sort of responded to, this sort of nuance of web roles, and made a fix in .NET 4.5. So this problem will go away with 4.5. Again, can install yourself, can wait for it to be part of the guest OS images. We have had some customers like Certus, as an example, who actually moved temporarily to a self-hosting model in a worker role, specifically around this issue. But we do have a fix coming from this. Other thing I'll mention is that right now there's a activation issue for WCF Workflow Services in the new Windows Azure website. So if you're working with a preview there, you should still be deploying your workflow services into web roles. That team is working on a fix that will allow you to actually deploy these workflow services directly into Azure websites and take advantage of those new capabilities. Okay. Let's see. So let's jump into a little bit more of a built-out demo of showing a workflow service in Azure. Again, a fairly simple example here. This is a mortgage application where I'm going to submit a request for getting a mortgage. I can add in my information here. I'll kind of leave the defaults here. It'll ask me a few things about credit history and that sort of thing. And I can come down here and I can submit my mortgage application. And so I can come back here and I can check status. This is actually now going out to multiple different vendors to get quotes on provisioning the mortgage with those parameters. It's trying vendor one. Vendor one didn't respond or denied. Vendor two is taking a look at the mortgage request. Vendor two has responded and given me a quote for that mortgage. We take a look at the app itself. Pretty straightforward. The workflow itself is receiving customer data. Can everybody see the workflow back there okay? Is that good? All right. So it receives in the request. It does some initial screening. So, if I have bankruptcy and have no credit history and that sort of thing, it may actually just deny the request before it even goes out to the vendors. And then after that, once it sent the response, and that's, I've been successfully screened, it goes out and calls a set of vendors, right? The vendor implementations are just WCF services, all implementing the same contract. I see vendor 1, 2, 3 here. And then just add service reference to kind of get this activity type generated with sort of the underlying proxy to call those services. And in this case, it's actually kind of calling them in sequential fashion based on sort of preferred vendor list. Obviously, you could change this to call those vendors in parallel and do price and quote comparisons and that sort of thing. That's the workflow definition from my ASP. app code's pretty simple here, where it is just an add service reference on top of that XAMLX, on top of that workflow service, spins up a new client instance, calls the operation on that client instance to evaluate mortgage, and that's going to kick off a new workflow instance. Right, make sense? And looks like our deployment did finish here on that hello world. We'll see if we can finish this scenario real quick. No worries. See my typical WCF page here. If I get my clients, I can now point to my Azure address. Again, this is one of those things where there were some fixes that we put in from config and implementation into Azure so that you could successfully get the metadata for this and successfully activate. But now kind of just the default config you get is going to allow you to have this pretty simple experience for getting up and running in Azure. So now I'm hitting my Azure deployment of that Hello World. All right. How are we doing on time? Okay, so I'm not going to show a demo of this, just simply didn't have time. But I do have a link to a sample here that shows using Service Bus bindings on top of WCF workflow services. If that's something of interest, check out, there's both a good article write-up as well as a code sample that Paulo on one of our internal CAT teams, who some of you probably have worked with, put together. So, kind of deep breath, pause. This is kind of that was the section talking about all of those things are things you can do right now. For using the framework capabilities of workflow up in Azure. I want to spend the last bit of the talk now talking again, kind of more forward-looking of some new capabilities the team is working on to further up-level the experience for running workflows in Azure. You know, really kind of the target here is taking a lot of kind of the common infrastructure and plumbing work that customers end up building today to kind of build out richer sort of solutions with the workflow. Take a lot of that away from folks so that folks can really concentrate on kind of the workflow logic, the integration with their apps, and that sort of thing. And so we're trying to kind of continue, you know, expanding on the work we've done here. If I go back to this hosting option slide, right, and kind of look at what we give you in the framework, a way to think about this is basically we're adding in sort of another solution here for you where you can think about just addressing workflow as a service, right? There's a service endpoint for you to deploy your workflows to, for you to kick off workflows, for you to get tracking information, right? So it becomes much more of, let's say, a turnkey solution for the running and managing of workflow themselves, and that becomes more of your management or sort of your integration story is sort of a service-based integration story from your app. In terms of what are we focused on here from a capabilities standpoint, first off is, you know, we're very focused on Azure solutions, supporting, you know, the ISVs coming on board and building out their SaaS applications, being able to run these things at high density, multi-tenant, elastic scale, meaning that you don't go configure instance counts and that sort of thing. You deliver us workflows, you deliver us messages, we scale up our system to support your load and the load of sort of all other tenants on the system. We've added in capabilities as well from a management standpoint of artifacts, so you can give us your activities, you can give us your workflows, we know the dependencies among those things, we do some internal versioning on top of those things, we do work to make sure that instances start and complete with the workflow definition that they in fact activated with, et cetera. Really push the boundaries around declarative authoring, so kind of full XAML-based authoring of workflows, building out the library of activities that we give you, for you to build workflows in declarative fashion and kind of pushing those boundaries. Instance management and sort of tracking and monitoring is obviously a key part of the workflow story and things we will keep kind of working on as part of our roadmap. done a lot of deep service bus integration, both from sort of an architectural level, but also from a programming model level, where you'll see activities being surfaced around consuming from service bus topics and queues, publishing to a service bus topic, et cetera, and having a good experience there. I talked about the DTC issue. There's sort of a reason that there's sort of challenges in putting DTC up in Azure. But obviously the scenario is important, so we've done a lot of work around sort of reintroducing capabilities here for giving you that process and message consistency for running your workflows in Azure. And then, of course, just the notion of standing up and running a service, where we want to give you those promises and SLAs around a service that we are operating and managing and have an operations team behind and that sort of thing. And the last point I'll make here is that, you know, think about this as a continued evolution of our workflow for work, leveraging the same workflow programming model, set of control flow activities, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so let me go through an example here, and this is actually going to kind of be a description of an example that I'll show you a demo of in a moment. So the scenario here is I have a trouble ticketing ISV. This is a ISV that's built a trouble ticketing application, and multiple different companies can leverage and take advantage of this trouble ticketing ISV. So we have good old Fabricam, who you're familiar with. In this case, they're in the trouble ticketing app business. And Fabricam builds out this help desk solution. And then, of course, many companies need a help desk. They don't want to go implement a help desk themselves. And so they leverage Fabricam's cloud solution. So Fabricam IT comes in. They get their own namespace on our workflow service. They have a set of activities for building workflows that will kind of do the extensibility and customization of a help desk. And then I could use a REST endpoint for interacting and uploading those activities. I could use our .NET client for uploading those activities into the service. Contoso comes along. Contoso needs a help desk to use internally. Again, they don't want to write that app. They're going to leverage Fabricams to get that help desk support. Contoso IT comes in. Maybe there's some particular activities Contoso is going to provision, you know, what it means to escalate a trouble ticket, maybe specific to the Contoso business, and let's say sort of override some generic logic that Fabricam has. And then the Contoso user comes in and builds workflows that can leverage, you know, both the Fabricam and Contoso activities. These Contoso users, they could be developers in Visual Studio. They could be non-developers in this rehosted scenario. Really sort of depends on the business. Okay, so with that, let's jump into a demo there. Try this one more time, just because the display is a little bit better. There we go. All right, so here's the Contoso customized version of this trouble ticketing application. I've already logged into the application. I see a whole bunch of trouble tickets that have been created here. If I click into one of these, I can see status information and who it's assigned to, unassigned in this case, phone number, who requested it, estimated hours for completion, start time, completion time. I can do things like adding comments. I can add work orders if there's a work order that's associated with addressing the trouble ticket, et cetera. By the way, this piece of the app is an open source trouble ticketing project, ADEF Help Desk, it's called, just to give them appropriate credit. So I just kind of took that and customized it for this particular scenario. So that's the trouble ticketing app. Let me kind of go through a little bit more on the pieces of the app. And so if I look at the app itself, let's look first at kind of the activities and workflow. So I have a set of help desk kind of represents the Fabricam activities. These are kind of general activities around assigning the role of who's supposed to work this ticket, determining an issue type, assigning priorities, and that sort of thing. I can open up one of these. Whoops. If I open one of these up, for example, let's say determine issue type, I can see some logic here for how the issue type gets determined. That'll be used later for deriving the role that the ticket should be assigned to. And so those are all just sort of out-of-the-box capabilities that Fabricam ships. Then Contoso comes in, and this is in a rehosted designer application. So, you know, the intent here is that maybe a non-developer can come in here and actually kind of define how should trouble tickets in Contoso be handled, right? So I have some kind of things around kind of just initializing the workflow. I use that determine issue type activity. Then I have within my flowchart some decision logic that says, well, in my scenario here, this is kind of around like a cable provider, for example. So like maybe somebody's called in and said they want to add ESPN or add a package into that. That's going to get routed to particular owners, and it's going to assign a channel provisioning role to that, for example. It might assign a normal priority to that, et cetera. The scenario I'll run through is actually a service outage, right? So a service outage, customer doesn't have service. That's going to be initially assigned to a network engineer, maybe rerouted later based on what they determine, but initially is going to be assigned to a network engineer, right? Okay, so let's see. The integration with that, again, this is just kind of going to be deployed. Right now I'm running this locally on my machine. The integration story from my MVC app is very straightforward. I have some kind of start parameters. I'm taking the task, and I just pass that in as JSON. And I call start on my workflow client. This is a .NET client that we've created on top of our REST endpoints for the service, and I call start workflow. I can also use a message-based activation model. Here I just programmatically call start. So with that, let's go ahead and go through an example. Oh, actually, I did want to show you this. Just I can also kind of address the service itself kind of through the endpoints on the service. I could come in here and, for example, go down and look at all the help desk activities. These are the same activities that we saw. I can just navigate my namespace and my scopes in the namespace against that service endpoint that is our workflow service. If I come back here now, let's run through a scenario. Let's go ahead and create a new ticket. I'll say that I have a service outage, or the customer has a service outage. And I'll hit submit ticket. This now is calling that start workflow operation on the workflow service, giving it the appropriate workflow definition type. I want to be looking for ticket 94 now. Come down here to ticket 94. I see, great, it's been assigned to a network engineer because it was a service outage, and it's been set with a high priority, right? So now let's say that I actually kind of have a change in my business, for example, and I'm going to reassign some of the priorities that I use here. I could come in here and I could actually say that, you know, not every kind of outage is necessarily going to be high priority. Let's just change this to, you know, normal priority for example purposes until it gets escalated to a higher priority. If I take this now and I go ahead and publish this, I can publish this against one of our endpoints so that I'm publishing a workflow. Wait for my response back that that's been successfully uploaded. And then so now, let's go ahead and submit a new ticket. And I can already see, actually, that that this has been assigned with a normal priority, right? So basically, you'll notice I didn't restart my app. My MVC app was up and running, but I was just deployed a new workflow definition out into our service, and that just sort of got picked up as new behavior into the system. Okay. All right, so that is a kind of a simple demo showing some of these new capabilities we're working on. Really kind of what would be the change for me to not be running the workflows on Box, but rather be targeting a Azure service deployment. It would be a change in the endpoint that I have in my config file, right? Same kind of experience there, but now I have a direct endpoint that I can publish workflows to, start workflows, interact with the workflows. And really the only thing that I'm doing is kind of provisioning my workflows and activities into the system, and then within my application kind of having the right sort of connection points in my app for when workflows start, when I resume points in a workflow, and so on. But a lot of that, you know, things you may do today around kind of that infrastructure work around kind of hosting workflows and roles and that sort of thing, again, we're trying to continue moving that bar to make it easier and easier for you to integrate and build out your workflow solutions. All right, just about done here. Okay, so what are some things I didn't have to worry about in this in building out this demo and in building out this solution? I didn't have to kind of worry about workflow artifact management. Where do I deploy files to? Am I building out a repository system and the code to kind of load from that for running my workflows? Right, I didn't have to do any of that. The database setup in terms of instance stores or tracking stores, setting that up, scaling that out, configuration, management of those things on a large scale production system and that sort of thing. I didn't have to do that. That's basically our responsibility. We're doing that in the service. Scale out, I wasn't sort of setting instance counts on roles. There's additional work you might have to do if you had very sort of large scaled out solutions in terms of being efficient in your message routing. That is all work that we do within the service itself. Sandboxing resource fairness. So again, targeting sort of multi-tenant solutions, both in terms of what our service supports, but for ISVs who, in their journey from having kind of single app deployments for their individual customers, now need to provide a cloud solution that is multi-tenant capable, right, where they can actually have multiple tenants of, the iCertus of the world or the Fabricam of the world. Needs to be able to support multiple tenants in an efficient, scaled out, high density way. Those are capabilities that we're providing, at least from a workflow standpoint, within these service capabilities. Transactional consistency, I talked about that. Activity referencing and updating some of the versioning semantics that we provide in the service. And then, service readiness, general kind of service uptime, readiness, and so on. From an Azure standpoint, we're doing work in terms of disaster recovery and working with the SQL team there in terms of failover capabilities across data centers and sort of worst case scenarios to make sure that your app is always, alive, running, and available to you and your customers. All right, roadmap. So again, this is a longer term sort of conversation we're talking about here, but the team is actually very actively developing this. The bits I showed you in the demo are all real bits. We do have this underway. If you're really interested in kind of digging into more here, we do have a TAP program initiated, or we can obviously just spend some time with you talking about your scenarios and digging deeper into the capabilities of the service. We do intend to have some preview releases of this available to you this year. We are focused in terms of providing this capability both on-prem as well as in Azure. And providing that symmetric capability across the two. We will actually provide the capability publicly to you first as an on-prem capability. That allows you to kind of do development, prototyping, work, same programming model experience, that same kind of like here's your endpoint, that is your workflow service experience. Really kind of the key distinction there is going to be that the service endpoint is not an Azure-hosted service. It is sort of the instance of your on-prem installation, right? But it'll kind of allow you to start kind of working with the service. First release, we'll be targeting around some sort of internal partners, and we'll continue building out more and more features and scenarios as we kind of evolve the product. But again, if you have some scenarios around some of these capabilities or just want to learn more, come up later, chat with me, or send me an email offline, and we can chat. Okay, so to summarize, workflow 4, up and available, running in Azure. A lot of your workflow scenarios that you're doing today are just going to work in Azure roles. For the one particular issue that I talked about, we do have 4 or 5 on its way as well. Plus, just being able to take advantage of all those great 4 or 5 workflow capabilities will be up in Azure soon. The Windows Azure workflow work is something that we're under development on and continuing to sort of make good progress on. Again, focused on kind of an Azure focus, but also a focus around kind of symmetric story for on-prem and in Azure. And the last point here, you know, we're sort of on this journey with you in terms of workflow capabilities in Azure. Definitely want to hear from you about your scenarios, what your requirements are, what's hard for you, what are new things you're trying to get done in Azure. So we'd love to kind of interact with you more, certainly just around workflow in general, but in particular around workflows running in Azure and sort of help shape the investments that we continue to make in this offering. Okay. All right. So just a reference in the deck. If you go grab the deck later, I have a bunch of links here that are both a collection of resources for you around workflow and or Azure. The top set of releases or top set of links there are good ways for you to engage with this. We have a user voice page if you've used that for other sort of products. It's a good way for you to submit ideas or feature requests, vote on other sort of requests that people have put in. We have a team blog that we use as well. So a few different ways to kind of engage with us as well as resources available to you. I think this is pretty much all sort of template slides you've seen dozens at least times this week. So that's a complete evaluation. So do absolutely complete evaluations. We'd love to get your feedback on the session, kind of what's useful for you and that sort of thing. So definitely take the time to complete the evaluations. You may have a little evaluation fatigue by Thursday afternoon, but I do appreciate getting your feedback here. All right. And with that, we're sort of wrapped up from a presentation standpoint. I'm happy to take any questions in a few minutes that we have left, either sort of in the large group or feel free to come up afterwards as well. Thank you.